Welcome to the first podcast from JKDN, joshklinghoffer.net. In line with JKDN's new extra strict and totally anal policies, listeners must agree to the following. If you are not wearing an item of red clothing, if you are listening on Sony headphones, if you are wearing odd socks, or if you have more than 14 letters in your name, you must stop listening to this recording now. And now we've got rid of all our listeners. For our first podcast, I'll be playing you a track from Fugazi bassman and solo artist Joe Lally. But first, I spoke to the man himself about his work with Ataxia and his solo work. I know it seems really strange that Ataxia was a band for, 2 weeks, 4 years ago? And yet people... yeah. I mean, are you surprised that people still ask about this?
Well, if John Frusciante was not involved, I guess I would be surprised that people were still talking about it. But, I mean, it only makes sense. I suppose the amazing thing is that he released so much stuff at that time.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the thing that we did was of interest to people. I don't know. I mean, who knows what people listen to these days, but it's always nice to know people listen to what you're doing. In a way, I wish we would have been able to sort of spend more time on it, or I don't know, approach it in a way that I don't know, that you just had more time to think about it. And at the same time, maybe it's better not to have thought about it too much and just do it.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of comments we've been getting are people love it because it sounds so organic and so raw. And I don't know if that was the intention behind it all.
Well, it just kind of was what it was. It's, you know, it started out, I mean, it was that raw because I was originally asked to play a show with them live. I was originally asked to play on a recording of one of the solo records. And I think Josh wrote a bass line that made him think of me, and he said Joe should play this on the record. But then they recorded really quickly, and I was out of town when they did it. And then they said, why don't you play a show with us and just play, we'll do a set of our solo stuff because we've never done it. But I really couldn't learn 9 of their songs that quickly, because I don't do that. It seems weird. I've been playing music for a long time, but I just don't sit down and learn people's music.
Yeah, so I guess it's different writing your own stuff and then or learning someone else's material. There's a huge difference to that.
Yeah, I mean, you can develop in both ways as a musician, and I just never developed much as, you know, listening to a record and figuring out how something is played.
Yeah.
I've messed around a little bit with a few things, but it's not some, you know, people develop an ear for it. I mean, you know, Dylan could listen to a record once and
play you
the song back, you know. I mean, I couldn't do that in a million years.
I mean, so how did you all meet to start with?
John just showed up at Fugazi shows. I can't be sure of the year exactly now, but he just showed up. We were doing some California dates, and he showed up at like 5 of them or something. The first one, I believe, was San Diego. And I don't know. It's kind of hard to explain. I mean, Flea was, you know, we stayed with Flea. Flea was a fan of Minor Threat, you know, before Fugazi started. Flea was in touch with Ian. You know, they either wrote each other or spoke on the phone or whatever. They had a relationship. And then, you know, John was not in the band when, I guess, I don't know how this worked. I think, I'm pretty sure that I saw the Chili Peppers play once with Ian in the DC area before John was in the band. And then, the next time I saw them was during a period where he was out of the band. So it's kind of confusing.
It goes back a really long way then.
Yeah, but anyway, before I saw John play in the Chili Peppers, he showed up at our shows. So really, he was somebody who was like a fan of ours before I really thought of him as a player in the Chili Peppers, which doesn't make any sense because I realize how popular they were at the time. But I really just didn't, I wasn't that acquainted with their music. As much as I loved Flea as a person, because we spent the most time with him, I didn't really see the other guys very much. But, it was just John showing up and like, he's just pretty intense when it comes to talking about music. So after those shows, I guess he came to like, I think he came to Las Vegas and LA and San Diego and like San Francisco. And just after those shows, I just felt that I wanted to talk to him more. I could just, it's kind of hard to describe, but I was just kind of sad that I was leaving him at that time. I felt like, I guess because it was so fast and we had just met him, I didn't really spend as much time talking about music as I would like to. And then, it kind of goes on. We saw the Chili Peppers play. He came to some more shows with Josh, I think in Texas and Arizona. But I don't want to start saying the wrong things because my memory's terrible. Yeah, then I moved there just because my wife had Italian friends there and we wanted to leave DC. So it could have been anywhere, but we ended up in LA. And so naturally it happened to be when the Chili Peppers were taking time off. So I would just call John because it's just so easy to talk to him about music and so much fun and so inspiring to talk about music. And so that's how I really met Josh, because he was just somebody hanging out with John. The first time I met him and they showed up at our shows, I would just, I got to talk to Josh very little, say, before we played a show, between sound check and a show or something. We didn't really get to spend that much time with him.
During the Ataxia recordings, I mean, obviously it was all, new material being written. I mean, which parts came first? Was it, the bass lines, the drums? Or did you have fixed ideas of what it was going to sound like?
Well, since this thing, we spent that day practicing that first day, and what I didn't realize was John recorded the first like 10 minutes of practice, which was me just writing a bass line and then playing to it. We just jammed, and I didn't know that he taped it, and that became the song Dust. And they really were coming, they were kind of, to put it bluntly, I mean, they were coming to my level and meeting me and taking the music from there. So really, in a way, yes, the bass line was written first because it was kind of the best way to do the music. I mean, that first day of practice, not only did we not have the keyboard player to fill out those parts of those songs, but of their, John solo music. But he said, it seems like a waste of time that I'm playing this other music with you when I'd kind of much rather be writing with you. And I said, well, you certainly could have gotten somebody to play this music more quickly and better than me. Because I didn't figure out the songs that well. And I always think of it as him being very, sweet and saying that and just kind of turning it into something rather than just going like, gee, this doesn't work. See you later.
Get out.
See you later. So it was, but I think they were also genuinely interested in, especially at that point, my theory. And if you were going to leave me alone to like construct music, that was my goal, which was to play one bass line in a song. I wouldn't necessarily choose to play them for 10 minutes, but that is just a product of what we were trying to do. We were trying to play a show and trying to fill up, an hour's worth of playing or whatever it was supposed to be over an hour.
You all sort of wrote your own parts then.
Yeah, it would just kind of be initiated by me settling into a bass line. While the bass line is forming, they could already be playing. I mean, definitely Josh would be playing and John might already start to do something. But you know, with a few minutes with a beat, I'd settle into something, and then I would just keep going. Like once it felt it was in place, you know, I didn't really know it was going to be the end product of, say, a recording. But you know, it led to that. Then that was kind of the, I suppose that was the goal, was to just how quickly can we work music into place, you know? And I think it was a really interesting exercise for them.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the lyrics, how is it decided who would write what?
I'm not sure how, I mean, it just kind of was going along with John taking home a day's playing and looking at those recordings as, you know, finished songs in the sense that he could choose what guitar parts he played that he liked the most or would keep or whatever. And, but at the same time, start putting words into those places so by the next practice, he would be singing on what we wrote in the previous practice. So it was, yeah, it was extremely fast when you think about it.
It's like Josh obviously wrote the lyrics for two of the tracks, and you wrote the lyrics for Montreal.
Yeah, so actually that's what I meant to say was that it really seemed like it was just going to be John singing. And then I'm not sure what led, maybe I'm not sure how that just came about, but either I guess one of us, maybe Josh was supposed to sing on a song, and then once he was singing on a song, they said, you know, I should sing on a song too, or you know, that was that. And so we just kind of somehow those songs fell into place, and yes, we wrote our lyrics to those songs.
Had a question in, what's Montreal about?
Well, for me to be able to write a song that fast, I don't. I'm still not thinking about the lyrics too much because, you know, what's done is done, and it was a project that really was supposed to be a show, and not necessarily a recording, and no one ever would ever hear it again. But if I was going to sing something, I just felt that I should really feel something for it, and it is about a particular time in my life, a pretty insane time of my life. I suppose also when I was very heavily listening to the music that influenced me to play the way I'm playing in that music, you know, songs that, you know, one bass line can carry the song. And it was about go. I was going to go meet somebody very, like my best friend was living in Montreal. She had moved there to go to school and stayed there. And I was going to go live there too. And, you know, I really didn't know what the fuck I was doing. And had I gone there, I really don't know if I would have ever made it out alive. It was just,
It's a scary place.
well, it's, I don't know. I didn't know anything about it then, but my mind was not in a good place, shall we say, and I didn't really have much, there wasn't much hope for me doing something incredibly creative there. It would have been more of a destructive thing. And it was kind of a, you know, looking back on it as kind of a joke. I mean, I was never gonna figure out my way to go there or maybe have the guts to go there or whatever it took at the time. I was, you know, I don't know, 18 or something.
We've had like more questions in. I mean, obviously, the Ataxi Sessions produced two recordings, but there are also two live shows that you played with them. And during these live shows, there were, a couple of jams. Were these just did these just come out of instant improvisation, or were parts of them already conceived? And it feels like such a long time ago. I mean, if someone asked me what I was doing 4 years ago, I couldn't tell them.
Yeah, you know, I honestly don't know what you're referring to. I suppose that
Right.
means maybe
Just made it up.
we were jam yeah, we may have just been making noise. And that's what it and so they are kind of instrumentals, yeah, that I really, yeah, I can't say that there was something that we may have worked on but didn't get recorded. And yet, I guess there's a possibility, but boy, we couldn't have written that much stuff in such a short time. But you know, those recordings, Those recordings were made like 2 days before those shows. Nobody ever heard them. So whatever the crowd is doing, they're just reacting to John being on stage. It's really strange. I really wish, in a way that, I mean, I don't know if anybody, it's strange when you start paying attention to it. because I don't, it's hard to be able to pay attention to. I mean, I just literally can't do anything about it. But if there, I mean, I think we all agree that if we were to put something out, we would get together again and really work on it. That's why the second release was kind of downgraded from being, I don't know, just a regular, just, well, just kind of being pushed more. It would have been, I suppose, a little more attention would have went into how it came out or how people found out about it or how it was advertised or whatever you might say. But it was the rest of that session, literally. And would we all get together now and play something? I mean, we would approach things. I mean, it would be really interesting because I have no idea what would happen. But it would be really fun to do.
I think there'd be a lot of demand for it as well.
And that's also strange because I think those guys, I mean, it's like the last thing that they have on their mind. I mean, as far as my ability to get out and play, I have a 6-year-old and I go out as much as I can. And so even my ability to go out, aside from, working at my own thing, I don't even know how much I'd be able to do. And those guys are much busier than me anyway, so.
I mean, we have a question saying, if we get enough people to ask really nicely, can you reunite and play in Europe? I mean, how many people would we have to get to ask?
Don't know. Just start the petition, I
Give
guess.
us a number.
Maybe I need to do that, just maybe so I can open, so I can go play there because I'm having a hard time trying to get over there.
Well, bring them to
But
Europe.
exactly. Yeah, I don't. I'm serious. Start the petition.
I mean, I know Josh spends quite a bit of time in Italy, so next time he's over, you should grab him.
Yeah, it's true. He's an elusive character, though. He's a hard guy to pin down. So I've never even attempted such a thing. He was here once. It just happened to. I think he just happened to email me. I don't think he even knew I lived here. And I was like, "Where are you in Italy exactly?" I was like, "I live in Rome now." And he wasn't nearby, but
No, I know he spends he spent some time over at I think it's called Red House Recordings over in Senegalia, which is on the other side.
Oh yeah.
So
Oh right, yeah.
next time he's in town, you just grab him.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great place to spend time, so I can't blame him. It's a good place to be.
I guess the final question really about ataxia is quite a bizarre one. But I'm reading through it now and it makes no sense to me at all. But on the song Union, which was Ola, apparently you play a killer bass line that goes B F D E F, which seems to be rooted on a B, while John plays a D, giving it a diminished fifth feel. Are you surprised that people dissect the music in this way?
That's like somebody writing about that.
Yeah,
That's
someone sent a
interesting.
question. Yeah, they've
Yeah.
broken down the song and they focus on the bass line.
It's kind of cool. I mean, I should probably know more about that, but I don't. I'm not against.
I'll send you this question by email so you can think about it.
Okay, I.
Because it's not something that you can just throw at somebody and say, what's the answer?
Yeah, I'm not against knowing more. I just don't know what that means. I think it means that it sounds cool.
Yeah, I said it's. I don't know, there was a long discussion about it on the website.
I suppose what it means is that those particular listeners found it interesting.
Yeah, quite a few listeners found it interesting.
Oh, that was cool. I can't even think of the song. But
You're going to have to go back and listen to it now.
yeah, I have to think about this.
Yeah, I will email you this question because it's hard for me to read, and so I can't imagine what it must be like for you for me just to throw this at you.
Well, yeah, it's the it doesn't really mean anything. This is what it means. But
Cool.
it's I'm glad that people are interested.
Yeah, I mean, talking more about your bass lines, we've had someone ask, how do you make the bass line sound so powerful? So, he's pointed out that, the bass lines are often, quite simple, but there's so much energy there. I mean, how did you pick up that style of play?
I guess you just have to believe in what you're doing. I fully believe in the bass as an instrument. I mean, I just think of bass lines that way. I think that they are, the root of songs of any kind. I see them. I see bass lines as very powerful statements, I guess.
Yeah.
And so I suppose that's what, in a way, I'm always working towards them being. I mean, to be able to function in music that way. And it certainly helps if the two other people playing with you are working at that same concept right alongside you with the kind of focus and dedication that John and Josh have. So,
Yeah.
there's no doubt that the way they play to what I'm doing and the purpose they give what I'm doing, really enhances what I'm doing. I often say I'm only as good as the people I'm playing with. And so really I try to play with fantastic musicians.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's a good example of it. If, people find this stuff interesting at all, I mean, it was pretty quickly written, but, I think all three of us at least, given the short amount of time, I think we're all extremely there, we're
Yeah.
very much in the moment of trying to make something out of something very simple.
Yeah. I mean, following on from the Ataxia sessions, did that impact on how you went on to write your own material? Or did
Well,
you take anything from those sessions, or did you already have your own songwriting methods?
The before I went to LA, I actually had a lot of stuff forming in my head, and I put a lot of it on tape with Ian before I left town, and drummer Ryan Nelson. So I'd remember the ideas and just kind of convince myself, and at least Ian, meaning somebody else, that these were songs. I needed some input to tell me, like, yes, these are songs. Make them, And playing with Ataxia really did. I think I even say that from the stage is that I really just felt that what I felt music was, because that's kind of the quest that I was on at that point was like, how am I going to make music now without these people that I've learned how to make music with? Now they're gone, the other members of Fugazi. So, playing with them was, certainly a shot in the arm in that sense of being able to go, okay, this is something, real musicians, have an interest in and basically are saying, yeah, go for it. Do your music, make your music. It's, I think I've heard music in my head for a long time and felt that it just wasn't anything most people would be interested in. But I was also busy with Fugazi at the time, so it didn't really matter. So then, that was the function that Ataxia really had. From the good thing about it is it really just encouraged me to, like, I mean, we in a way we were doing something that was, it was kind of abstract. I mean, it was as weird as that was, like, okay, one bass line for, I mean, that's a bit extreme. For as long as the songs are, I'd make them shorter. My songs, I purposely make them shorter because of that kind of approach where it has maybe one change. And I just figure, before people get sick of this, why don't we just get out of it, escape. That was the big thing for me, I think, the main thing of playing with them was encouragement.
Was it a scary thing going from, I mean, Fugazi was such, big influential band, and suddenly you're out there on your own. I mean, was that a scary process?
In a way, I was fearless because I had to do it, and it was it felt awful. I mean, I made myself get up and play music in front of people, even though I wasn't sure I could do it. And so I started by just standing in a record store because I was like, okay, this is a public place. And I didn't want to tell anyone I was going to be there. I just thought, if I stand in a public place and the guy who's behind the counter and me are in the room, this is the beginning of me playing my music in public, you know. But then, of course, you know, five or six of my friends found out and they came, and it was horrifying. I was reduced to, like, you know, just dust, you know. It was horible. And I walked out of that going like, oh my God, you know, I've got to find a band, people to play with again. But that feeling lasted for about 5 minutes, and then I was like, no, I must conquer, you know, this feeling. And so I, you know, subjected a lot of innocent people to something probably fairly terrible for a while there. I went out and did some playing in like coffee houses and stuff and record stores or whatever, and but I just had to go through the process. And so that was the I suppose the difficult part about it. But when you really have to do something out of a need to do it and a love to do it, it's difficult and scary, really don't fit into the equation. It's what had to be done, you know. And
Yeah, I mean, so what's the biggest lesson you've learned from coming from, you know, such a big band to now striking out on your own? I mean, you know, you've got your second solo album out now.
Boy, well, there's probably a million lessons that I've been learning along the way, and I'll continue learning. But it's certainly probably the clearest statement is that things are not like they used to be. As far as the way people find out about music, find out about music they're going to go see, find out about music they're going to buy, music that is going to have an effect on them, or music they get into, or how seriously they take music. I'm not even sure what it means to people anymore. And I know what it means to me. And I want to keep getting together with people in a room or outside in a place and experience it together, because it's still something really, really important to me. And I don't know if, I don't know what people make of it, because there's just so much going on. I don't know, you know, if people, you can't just say, you know, oh, people are like this now, or people are like that. Everything is so different about how music is consumed and heard that you just can't generalize about lots of people anyway. But, you know, it's really just important to me to get together with people and play my music, because frankly, I can't go to shows. I just can't get myself to go out and go to shows. You know, like I just put my daughter to bed and I'm doing this interview, and then, you know, I'm gonna go to sleep. I mean, I'm just tired. I suppose the biggest thing that it's taught me is that music is just as important to me now as, you know, when I first discovered it.
How do you approach the songwriting now? I mean, on your two solo albums, I mean, obviously you have had, like, you know, guest musicians in. On the second album, the sound is actually, it's still sort of stripped down, but it's sort of more developed than your first album. I mean, is that something that you're learning as you're going along,
Totally, yeah.
or?
I think what you're hearing in my records is exactly that. I mean, you're hearing me learn. First record is
Yeah.
literally trying to understand how to put this music down on tape, you know. I know how I would record the first record now. I mean, I can see that there's still a variety of ways to do it, but I could sit down and record the whole record again completely differently, in a completely different way. And I
Yeah.
wouldn't necessarily do the second one, approach that with the same kind of feeling, but it's there. But that's kind of how I see the music. I see the music as
Yeah.
it can be recorded in the studio, but when it's played live, a lot can happen. Not with every song, but with the songs off these two records. I mean, I hope that I am playing these songs for the rest of my life and that they keep changing. And I hear a lot of possibilities that I just don't have the opportunity
Yeah.
to explore. I mean, I would play these songs with I would play these songs with people who play almost entirely free. It's hard to describe, but I wouldn't want every song to sound the same. So it's not like I just want, people to just go ape shit and then I'll sing over them. But I would play these songs off these two records. I would play a lot of them without playing bass. I would just sing, and I'd love to have, an extremely free kind of drummer. I don't even know how to explain what I would do, but people could be just totally making noise. People could play one particular thing throughout the entire song. I mean, I would just set up, for me, it's gathering people together and setting and making the set, varying the set. So it's an interesting set to go through for the listener. And I'm trying to hone in on a band, but it's really difficult because anybody nowadays plays in like three bands or whatever. And I'm not in a position where people are just going to play with me when I'm ready to go out. And I do go out a lot.
Looking on your website and the list of tour dates, past and it's just incredible. I mean, how do you find the time to write and record?
Well, the writing thing just has to go along. I mean, I develop songs with people sometimes in a sound check, sometimes in the one or two practices that we have. I mean, I've been working with a guitarist here now, but I'm not going to be able to take him on my next tour. He plays with a band here where he can really make money. And I tell him, you got to do that because I'm not in a position to really help you out much. And but he's really interested in playing with me, and he's really good, Andrea. And he, I can sit down with him and just play just the two of us whenever we can, because we don't live too far from each other. But then we'll go play with a drummer, say, in Brazil. And it wasn't until we arrived in Brazil that a song started to develop. And so there was a new song we played during that tour, and then we carried that into the next tour we did in the States because I'd been playing it with Andrea. But really, that song developed, playing with different drummers. And so it was kind of doing it during sound checks and stuff, or doing it as an instrumental and just letting it be like, okay, this is a song that we're just kind of throwing out there, like a little piece we're throwing out there. And it's not completely like, it's not completely shattered or unmanageable. So it's a nice thing to listen to, but it's just a little thing. It's just a little ditty. And then you go into a real, you go into a real song after it. And then that slowly developed. And you could see the arrangement. Once I can see the arrangement, it sort of shapes itself. But it's hard to figure out. A lot of songs, it's like I have a basic concept for music, and once I get the lyrics, it can really fall into place. And I'm really struggling with lyrics for the third record. I have about, five ideas for the third record, and it's something that I'm more, I suppose anyone will tell you their third record is, the tough one or something. But you kind of expect more of yourself, or you just want to do something different. And so I just want to do better. I just want to be better at what I'm trying to do for the third record. So I think I might take more time and not force myself to try and get it recorded before the fall,
You're now based over in Italy, and do you think, and it's such a big change from, being based in the States. I mean, do you think, now being based in Italy, that's going to impact on how the third record will sound?
Yes, I mean, I still don't know. It may end up being that it's recorded here with the guys that I'm playing with, or it may be that I go back to the States and record with completely different people, just depending on what happens between now and the time that I'm ready to record. I would really love to be able to keep playing with the same people because I've found that I can just change. Unless I'm playing with really good people who I can't afford to pay, to really to be able to do what I want to do. I want the music to change night to night. I want to be able to say, like, look, let's do this song like this tonight. And people who are good enough can just go like, oh yeah. And then you don't have to say too much, and it just takes a different course, and it can be fine. They can follow me, follow my lead over it. But otherwise, I want to play with the same, in my position, the people I play with, I want to play with the same people. So we can play the songs one way on a tour, and if we want to change them on the next tour, they understand what I'm talking about because they've done it enough with me one way to, it can quickly change shape and go in a different direction.
How do you bring in sort of, the guest musicians that you play with? Is it just people that are around you at the time or?
Sometimes it's that. I mean, Andy Gale, who plays on the last record, he works at Discord, and we recorded in the Discord house basement, and that's across the street from where the office where Discord Records is run. And Ian was just saying, because I was struggling with like the amount of time I had with Ricardo, we could only learn he could only do so many songs with me that quickly. And then Ian was basically like, Andy's across the street. He's a good drummer. So I was like, well, he should come over and do, and so I assigned like kind of three or four songs that I'd try and play with him. And then, it's a lot to do to somebody quickly. So the songs that he played best on, we recorded. And they just kind of happened that way. And then there's ideal people, I think, who I think are just going to pick up on it faster, or if I assign different songs to different people, they can all come in and play on that song. And I really want the next record completely figured out like that. I want everybody who's going to play on it to know exactly what they're doing, and really not as much of it is quite so open. Of course, there's always Guy Picciotto and Eddie Janney who play together, two guitar players, who really, if you give them a backing track, all you need to do is roll the tape and hit record, and that's the way. They're just amazing. And I want to write a whole other record that is just a rhythm section for them to play over, just so I can sit back one day and listen to them as they play over top of the whole record, because they're amazing. And so there's people like that. I guess I just see the role that different people I know can play. And then I just, I just kind of leave it open to that. That said, it all depends on the situation I end up in when I'm ready to record the next record.
Excellent. I mean, where do you find all the inspiration? I mean, obviously, you're touring a lot. I mean, is the inspiration, how do you find that?
Boy, I've been seeing bands since I was about 11, 10 or 11. I was seeing R&B bands like the Spinners and the Jackson 5 and the Isley Brothers. Since I was about 10, when I started listening to James Brown and Otis Redding, I mean, the first song that really meant a lot to me was "Try a Little Tenderness" by Otis Redding, and I was like, 9 or 10. I mean, that song's about being in love with a woman. I was 9 or 10. I had a lot to learn. I had a lot to figure out. But for me, there's something that is communicated to, to people beyond lyrics, beyond what people appear to be standing there doing. If you're seeing them, or if you're just listening to a record, I think that there is something, and that's why we all love music so much, is I think it we use a part of our brain that, they say there's this big glob of brain that we don't use. But I think music is, we use that one of those parts of the brain that are never used for anything else. It's a very specific, I think it's connected to like, the telepathic things and the Neanderthal thing, that you do as a pack. And the universal mind. I mean, if you want to talk to me about music and inspiration, I mean, I see everything through music. I mean, music is, for me to play music is to just to be doing the best thing that I could possibly be doing on this planet Earth with the life that I was given. I do not want this to sound religious, but frankly, all the religions have that topic cornered, and frankly, I think they've abused it. And so, if I want to talk about music being connected to the infinite, it's not anything that you've ever heard of. It's just the infinite, and it connects all of us, and it connects us to the people in the future and everyone who was here before, and certainly to much more than people. So, inspiration is constantly streaming.
My brain's actually just switched off. Thinking about the infinite, and my brain's just gone looking for
Well, that's what, I think that's exactly what is supposed
it.
to happen. You're not supposed to be thinking at all. But listening to music, I mean, boy, being at YouTube is just the greatest thing ever, I guess, because, if I think of Nina Simone, I can pull up some song I've actually never heard
Yeah.
before and certainly never seen her play before, and then just sit and watch her, just completely, she's just incredible, and to see her do a song, I don't even know what it's called. It's such an amazing song. I just kind of, was flipping through there, and I don't know how they get, in kind of the first place, like the most listened to song. I don't know.
Yeah.
But there was this one where it was just like, I ain't got no house, I ain't got no shoes, I ain't got no food, I ain't got no bed, I ain't got no car, I ain't got no steering wheel, like. I mean, I just had never heard that song before, and that's just, it's all depends on what you like, but.
What are the last few CDs you bought or listened to?
Well, sitting in front of me, what I put on today was a collective improvisation by the Ornette Coleman Double Quartet. And yes, it's called Free Jazz, but that's what I listened to today when I had a chance to, well, to do the dishes, frankly. I put in the headphones and. And listen to what I can. The other thing I listened to today was an Italian singer named Mina, and she's just about the biggest thing here since like the 60s. And even though she moved to Switzerland, she's still, just the diva of Italy. And you should look her up on YouTube. As a matter of fact, you should look up a song called Sei Telefonando, which was written by Ennio Morricone. It's a pop song he wrote, and it's insane. It's completely insane, that song. It's like a verse and like 20 choruses, and the choruses just keep going higher. I mean, it's like he was trying to kill the person singing it or something, but she just has such an amazing voice. And actually, there's a TV program from the 60s, her singing it on this program, and there's an orchestra, which is people stacked up on top of each other, like the game Hollywood Squares. They're in the background, and they're not even playing. She's lip syncing. And I swear to God, I mean, that song is so heavy. Every time I listen to it, when I watch her doing that song on this program, she's lip syncing it, and it still kills me. I'm sure you'll look at it and go, I can't believe he's listening to this. But I'm telling you, that's the thing about music, is that something is communicated beyond what appears to be said. It is in the intention of the writer. And in this case, if you don't get something out of it, I mean, I think I'm just hearing something else, that's all. It's saying something else to me, and it's important.
Definitely one we're gonna have to look up. It sounds amazing.
I think I just need to put it up on my MySpace page, included as a video to watch.
Send it out as a bulletin to all your friends. Am I crazy or
Right.
is this great?
I know it's great. I know it's great. Anyway.
We're gonna be playing one of your tracks to the listeners and to the sight readers, which was Door Closing. What can you tell us about the track?
I guess it didn't seem very finished when we started to record it. And I frankly, I might not have been very finished as to understand where the recording was going, but I had faith in the song that it was there. And once the lyrics, were down, it just was kind of great. And then Ian put his guitar, and Ian misunderstood me when I was doing vocals, when all the music was recorded in the basement at Discord, all the basic tracking, and then it was brought to Inner Ear. And when we were at Inner Ear, Ian was playing in the live room to that song, and I came in and made a suggestion, but he misunderstood my suggestion. And so he didn't play on the whole song like I wanted him to. He just played at the end. So it came out, I didn't really want it that way, but I had already moved to Italy, and he finished playing on it and then mixed it while I was gone. But that's how my records are made. They have that open end to them for somebody who I trust to be able to add something, or really to do a lot of editing in the final mix. I'm kind of trying to encourage people to do some editing, and certainly run it past me. But anyway, I guess that's what I can tell you about that song.
Coasting backwards, anesthetized.